Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Minutes after 9 o'clock on the West Coast. Joining me from Grand Forks, North Dakota, a son of Thunder Bay, Ontario, Greg Lotus. Greg, what is up? How are you?
How are you doing, brother? Nice to talk to you.
No, it's I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. What's going on in the Northern Plain today? Anything exciting going on?
No, but I'm getting some interference. Some music playing in the background. I can hear it, Mac.
All right, hold on a second. I will.
Maybe you got something going on. I just want to make sure that that's taken care of.
Nope.
There you go.
There. That should be good. What? So nothing exciting. Nothing exciting going on.
No. Pretty quiet here, really.
All right. The now I've got. I don't know if you've got a headset on, but you're like clipping in and out.
No, I don't have a headset on. Is this better?
Say
is that better?
That's better.
Okay, I still hear something in the background, Mac. It's like an interview. Political.
Hold on. You're hearing things that nobody else is hearing, so I've got to fix that.
Yeah, that's done. That's
the,
better.
All right. First of all, for people that haven't met you, we have to do like a 60-second. Give us a 60-second autobiography of Greg Lotus.
Okay. Well, you already said I'm from Thunder Bay, but I've been in the States, an American citizen longer than I was in Canada. I am the proud father of three kids, a college freshman, a sophomore, and a senior in high school. And a freshman in high school, my youngest son is. And then I also have a senior daughter in high school that plays volleyball. And I like to eat, cook, pretty much goes hand in hand. And I've been married for, a long time, since May 22nd of 99. So going on over 20 years to my beautiful breast cancer surviving wife, Heather, who is home today and going out for lunch soon.
Really? Now, yes. Heather can talk some serious trash.
Yes, she can. She's no slouch in that department.
In fact, I met Heather before I met Greg. I met Heather at a breast cancer fundraiser with a woman who is departed, Louise Eberwin.
Yes.
Was a mutual friend, and I was there doing my radio show and doing my thing, and I saw this girl walk up, and Louise said, "Hey, Mac, I want to introduce you to Heather." And little did I know that all these years later, we would still be friends. Tell everybody you're playing. You grew up in Canada. You're a hockey player like everybody else, but you're a little bit too big for the rest of the kids. And and so you ultimately become an offensive lineman at the University of North Dakota. And give everybody a little synopsis of that.
Yeah, I switched and played a year of high school football in Canada, and end up getting recruited really raw. I was a rather large, kind of rotundrous child. But worked out for me. I'm 6'6", and so I filled out that frame pretty big. But went to University of North Dakota, ended up getting drafted in the CFL, second overall. But declined that because the money and prestige of the NFL was tough to turn down. So Ended up signing with the Jets and played there for a few years until a injury sidelined me, which is very typical. But what's not typical is getting a brutal infection that cost me my career and almost my life. So that's me in a nutshell.
The one of the things, if you wouldn't mind relaying, that I told people about you a little bit ago, I teased, was when you first made the Jets and the conversation that Coach Parcells had with you about you have no business being on this team. Will you relay that conversation?
Well, basically, it was before the last preseason game, and we were playing the Vikings, and I was sitting in the locker room, and the offensive line coach walked by and said, you're wanted upstairs. So I was like, oh, shit, I'm getting cut. So I grabbed my playbook because that's what I figured, and he said, you don't need that. Just go up. And so he made me sit in his office for, I don't know, 20 minutes. It's kind of dark, and then there's only one desk lamp, and then he comes in, and, you know, he's a big guy, but he puts his feet up on the desk and his hands on his belly, and he says, you don't have an ounce of athletic ability in you. He says, you don't know how much of a long shot it was to make this team. But he said, somehow, some way you get shit done. So I just want you to know you're starting tomorrow. So I was like, all right. I mean, what do you say to that, really, right?
I don't know what you say. What did you say?
Well, nothing. I just was excited that I got the start, but I mean, I don't care. I don't care what you think, as long as you're gonna put me on the squad. That's all that mattered to me.
Right, right. Talk about one of the other cool things that's, you know, and so in the NFL anywhere, right? That's big stuff. In the NFL in New York City, would you say that's an above average experience?
That's well above average. Yes. You get to see and do things that are usually reserved for the very wealthy or privileged, and you get to eat at some great places and do some good things with charities and stuff. You know, that, for example, like United Way had a dinner that was $10,000 a plate, and they wanted, you know, as many football players there to sit with and stuff like that. So it was at the Waldorf Astoria, and that, as you know, is a pretty prestigious place. The food was just amazing. At the time, my wife didn't like sushi, or she didn't think she liked sushi, and they had the longest sushi table there I've ever seen, and I didn't even eat dinner, I don't think, because it was between that and the shrimp cocktail that was the size of my thumbs. So I could not contain myself.
Heaven. And then, you know, and I think it's important to understand that part of the story, because then, you know, Greg goes from living that life to, you know, being disabled and, you know, and living, you know, can't walk without a cane, can't walk for a period of time. And all of a sudden your world, you know, your life is destroyed, and Heather gets breast cancer. And it's you and Bocce. And I think it, you know, one of the cool things I remember, and I didn't know this part of Greg's story until Gene Upshaw passed away. And we were doing the show, and we were talking about Gene Upshaw. And Greg told me a part of the story that I didn't know. Gene Upshaw, longtime Oakland Raider, and then the longtime president of the NFL Players Association.
Yep.
Talk about Gene Upshaw in your life when you didn't. And the other part of this is the NFL and the state of New York. Greg's part of legal history in the country because they walked away from him, and so here he is in North Dakota. You know, he can't work, and his wife has breast cancer, and all of that. So, talk about Gene Upshaw in the midst of all that.
Well, you know, he was instrumental in helping me out because you have to play 3 years and three games to be a vested player, and therefore, you know, you get benefits associated with that. But I didn't make it to that point because of this surgery. multiple surgeries and the injury. And he was instrumental in, first of all, introducing me to the Dire Need Fund, which helped pay my mortgage and my bills for a couple months. And then also instrumental in helping me get my disability insurance covered, because there was some hoops to jump through and all that kind of stuff. As you know, you pay for disability insurance and stuff like that, so the premiums are quite high. But he helped me out tremendously, and did so without much fanfare, and so I definitely owe him a debt of gratitude.
The and in terms of your legal fight, give everybody a thumbnail of that. I mean, you're part of you know, legal history in this country. What?
Basically, what it is, it amounts to is, I tried to sue the Jets team doctors for medical malpractice, and we wanted to see, you know, go down that road, and they responded by saying that under New York State law, we weren't allowed to sue them because they were fellow employees of mine. And the best parallel I could draw is to say that we both work at McDonald's and you spill the grease on the floor and I slip on it. I can't sue you. I have to sue McDonald's.
Right.
So we tried to obtain their contract to see what the relationship was. And they came back for the two doctors that I was suing and said all contractual obligations have been oral. And when I heard that, I just about died, because who in their right mind, especially a doctor, that has an oral contract to perform surgeries on professional athletes?
Nobody.
So then,
nobody.
Then we wanted to see how much they get paid a year. And wouldn't you believe it? One of them got paid $10,000 and the other one got paid $17,000. But they have the luxury suite and boxes at the stadium. They had other things provided by the team. So, you know, basically it was a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
And the Players Association came to the case even and supplied a lawyer even. Out of California, Jeff Walsh is his name, very famous attorney down there. And still, the went to the court, and we lost. We didn't even get the right to sue them. So that's why I think Gene Upshaw helped so much, because obviously that lawsuit would have been for a considerable amount of money, and I got a big fat donut out of it. So I wouldn't mind seeing that doctor, though, one of these days, like bumping him into him in New York City.
It's just like having to get out of a cab or something like that, and you stand up, and all of a sudden he's like standing on the curb, like waiting to get in.
Mm-hmm.
How would that go?
I don't know. I've thought about it many times, though. Many, many times, because although my bitterness has not gone away, but has subsided as I learned to deal and cope with my situation. It was very difficult at the start, and for years, actually, the depression and your part of your identity is, or a lot of your identity is playing football, being a professional athlete. You work hard at it, your body, the way you eat, all that kind of stuff. And then shit, it's gone in a second. Not because you got hurt, but because the doctors would not listen to you when you kept saying something was wrong, and they just kept telling you, go rehab. And so the infection was allowed to sit in there for so long, and then I caught another infection. And so basically getting wheeled into the hospital and not being cognizant because I was getting sepsis. Everywhere in my body, so my wife had to basically power of attorney sign a piece of paper that said if they needed to take my leg, then they had permission to do so. So it was scary to say the least, and I still suffer the lingering effects of it. And I will for the rest of my life. But it was a hell of an experience to play football.
The Greg has a picture. One of his I Love Me pictures is of him with the chef, Kim, as he's known on the program, the chef had, like, his picture above my picture in his restaurant. And so I was there once. I'm like, why is Lotus's picture above mine?
And it's better looking.
And it's Greg's picture in his jet uniform playing. And you're playing – were you playing left tackle? What's
yeah.
that?
Playing Philadelphia on left tackle, yeah.
And bought, like, it's a picture of him going from, like, his you know, stance, and he's just kind of reached that pass protection position, and he's got his bicep cocked. And it's a picture, like, if it was my picture, I would love that thing too. I would have that. I would have that painted on out in front on my driveway. That would be my driveway.
My arms don't look like that anymore. I'll tell you that.
It doesn't matter. You have one picture than they did. That's all that counts is you got.
That's true.
That counts the picture. I don't know if you have you had a chance to listen to the interview I sent you that I did yesterday with Matt Kuyker, but. You know, it's been interesting for me because, you know, so Greg and I start doing that and the different traumatic events that I've been through in my life, you know, all of a sudden I meet a guy, Greg, who's lived through his own, and it was something that we had in common.
Yeah.
And you talked about, and he did this live on the fucking show, and I was like, oh my God. And I knew his parents were listening too because they moved from Thunder Bay down to Grand Forks, and now they unasked Grand Forks are in Arizona, but anyway, you talked about killing yourself.
Oh yeah,
and so I'd be curious. Did you have a chance to listen to the interview yesterday? And I'd be curious.
I didn't yet.
Okay, well, yesterday's National Suicide Awareness Day, and okay. We could talk about that sometime when you listen to it. But tell everybody, you know, your thoughts. What I mean, you're an athlete, right? You're a professional athlete. You're a fighter. You know, whenever anybody would meet you, one of the things that comes through is Greg's a fighter. What gets you to the point where you would even contemplate suicide?
Well, it was probably a year after I left New York, or maybe a little bit less. And it was basically a whole bunch of, you know, a big storm of different things. Number one, you can't provide for your family the way you want to because you can't work. You're going through surgery after surgery. So the pain, which I never missed, I missed one game in my career. But other than that, played with, you know, broken ribs and fingers, and that's standard stuff.
Right.
But the pain and not sleeping at night and being alone with your thoughts when everyone's in bed and it's, you know, you get up to go to your chair to put a bag of ice on your leg, take some medicine. Your chair is a little bit more comfortable, but 12 o'clock turns to 2 o'clock, turns to 4 o'clock, and you don't sleep and you catch maybe glimpses of sleep here and there. So it affects your mood and everything else. And then, you know, with that, I had a newborn baby. You know, without my wife, definitely, I know I would have done something stupid as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, it's a permanent solution to what I thought was, a problem that was never going to go away or never going to get better. But you talk it out, you go see somebody, and slowly but surely, you get to, you know, deal with yourself in a different way. And I just had to learn how to do that.
How did, so you would say it was the prolonged and layer after layer, wave after wave of this shit coming, and then pretty soon, you know, the blackness covers up the light, and you don't see any way this thing changes, and it just keeps coming, and you know, because it's I think it's interesting. I don't You know, what you talk to people that that go through that, and I think it's so good when people will talk about it. And as you said, you know, I didn't know how to get through it. I didn't know how to deal with that stuff because we tend not to talk about it. And so I just think it's so good. I think it's inspirational and it's motivating for other people to say, oh my God, that's what I felt.
Well, the thing is though, you know, my wife, we go to this therapist. I never knew him from Adam, and I sit down and she comes to my first appointment with me. And it was my last one with him, but I'll tell you why. Because I explained my story to him briefly and said that I went from third string to second string to first string, worked my way up. And then when I got hurt, I was starting. So it was difficult and this and that. So after I get on with my story, he looks at me, kind of tilts his head a little bit, and he says, okay, tell me more about these strings on the field. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, you know, these, you mentioned the first string, second string. And I said, holy shit. I said to my wife, we are leaving. Right. Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, you talk about talking to someone, you got to find the right person because, I mean, who can really relate to my situation as far as, you know, it's not another professional athlete. It's not, you know, someone like that, a football player and with the knee surgery. So you got to find the right person, and I did.
No, you know what? But until you talk to somebody about that, right? Somebody says, oh, we want you to go see a therapist. And I think I could tell you what happens to a lot of Marines is that they go and they have that experience and they don't like the guy. And what do they do? They just stop going.
And I don't blame them. I mean, sometimes it's got to be the right fit, Mac. You know what I mean? And the way that soldiers are and the pressure of combat and then also the brotherhood that it is, very similar to a team, although on a much bigger scale and much more dangerous. Don't get me wrong. I'm not comparing football to
but it's very, you know, duty, it's very common.
Yeah. And so, you know, then they leave – you know, the Marines or wherever they are, and they might talk to a guy once in a while and stuff, but they don't get the same kind of attachment like to when you plug in, you know what I mean? And that's got to be difficult.
Well, no, I say that, you know, the facing movement, right? You know, left face, right face, the facing movement that gets you in front of the door that leads to really bad things is isolation. And you described it late at night by yourself again with your pain again, taking these medicines that make you feel however they make you. You know, Marines call it the zombie cocktail. You can feel it. You don't like it. And you're there. And you and everybody goes there alone the first time, right? You've never been there before. You don't know how to do this. And if you're not lucky enough to cross paths with somebody that can be your guide and help you through it, you can see why so many people struggle with it because we tend not to talk about this shit. And I will tell you what, the response when, you know, I remember the first time Greg told the story, the response to it was people were like, oh my God, holy shit. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And you know,
Robin Williams has a famous quote that everyone you meet is fighting a battle you can't see.
Right.
And that's so true. But, excuse me, I know that this mental health stuff is getting better because of people talking about it. And it's not a sign of weakness any longer.
Well, let me tell you, it's just the way it is. And if you won't go there with people, in my opinion, then you can't call yourself a leader. And I don't know that you can say that you care. In fact, the interview that I sent you, that kid is 23. His dad commits suicide on the phone when he's 9 with he and his mom. Yeah. One of his best friends in elementary school hangs himself because he's being molested by his stepmom and his dad's beating the shit out of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a tough life.
Oh, my God. Well, it gets worse. His brother, his kind of adopted brother, commits suicide. He goes home to bury him, and he finds out that his brother was sleeping with his fiance.
Oh.
Right. And so when he tells me a story, I'm like, this guy's making this shit up because he just doesn't want to sit through this class I'm supposed to give.
Yeah.
But it's all true. It's all true. And so, you know, he goes to get help and people, you know, tell him, you know, things like time heals all wounds and all that shit people tend to say. And then I meet him and, you know, he told me he wasn't going to stay for this thing. And I say, hey, why don't you come with me for a second? And before we even sat down, he looks at me and says, does it ever stop hurting? And I said, no.
Yeah.
I said, no. And he said, you're the first person that was ever honest with me. And so to me, I think that honesty and that truth gives you an opportunity for people to listen, because when you go through what Greg went through and people look at you and say, there's a purpose in this, right? And time heals all wounds. You know, you just, when you're there, you look at them and say, I'm not sure if I should punch you in the face or like be rude to you or just say thank you and walk away. But you have no idea how much it hurts when what I'm going through affects me so deeply and you say some kind of off the back of your hand phrase, throwaway phrase to you, time heals all wounds.
Yeah.
I wish I could live in your world, Pollyanna, but I don't. Right?
No, and you know what? That's sometimes people don't know what to say, so they say things like that, and it's not their fault. I mean, sometimes it's better not to say anything, but they're trying to sympathize with you in a certain way, but it just...
They don't know
how. Yeah, it just rubs you the wrong way, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God. And that's why I always say, don't say anything. Just give them a hug. Just give a hug and squeeze them and say, hey, if you're struggling, if I find out that you're struggling and you don't call me, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to come over here and start some shit. Yeah. Say that because nobody says that, okay?
That's right.
You don't say that to people that are struggling. But you know what you'll do? You'll make them laugh, right? And you will inject a sense of normalcy when all these other people are saying this same kind of stupid shit to them. And when you're on the receiving end, that stuff sucks. Well, give us an update. You have a son playing college football. What's are they going to play? Is University of North Dakota?
They're not pushing it this spring. Their whole conference.
So he went to school, and then what? A bunch of guys got COVID, and
he was one of them. He went to school on. We dropped him off Sunday at the dorm. By Thursday, he wasn't feeling well, and got tested, and by Saturday, he had it. So he was quarantined in the dorms. They brought him food and everything else. But then you know how that goes. He wasn't the only one because people were traveling from all over the nation to come to school.
Right.
And I don't know how many guys have gotten it so far. So they go in various stages of just working out and doing on-the-field drills so many days a week and stuff like that. So
talk to me about what are they doing with classes at the University of North Dakota? Are they all?
It's a mix. It's a mix. Yeah. It depends on the size of the class and the availability for space and stuff. So he does have a few classes that where he goes, and the rest of it is distance learning.
Got it. What about high school? At Red River,
High School, they're going every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, depending on where you fall in the alphabet, and then they switch the opposite weeks.
Nice.
I mean, so yeah, everyone's got to wear a mask and stuff like that, and you know that deal. So,
right.
I'm sure you guys have had plenty of discussion on the COVID in this radio station.
Uh-oh. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, the response. I mean, is it real? Is it not real? But I mean, Colleen, my daughter and Greg's daughter are the same age. I mean, you're going into your senior year in high school, and Colleen hasn't been, except to go to, you know, volleyball workouts, she hasn't been to school yet this year. Orange County just came off the watch list, and they've been off it for 2 weeks, so they will be able to start classes, I think, along the same lines that you're talking about.
Okay.
And at the end of the month, so in another couple of weeks, they're looking to do that. But, you know, I think it's really important. I was talking about, you know, my favorite college football team is Notre Dame. North Dakota is number two. But I mean, Notre Dame's philosophy was we have to bring the kids back to campus. We have to find a way through this. We've done it through every crisis in the nation's history, yep. And we're not going to stop now. And to me, that's quintessentially, you know, that's what you have to teach. That's what you have to do. That you have to find a way to do it and not to just say, okay, we're going to take, in my opinion, the very easy way out, which I don't know, Greg. I mean, Greg's a really smart guy, okay, and I think I'm above average. But if I was given the chance to go to class on Zoom, I'd have the TV monitor with ESPN on it over on top yep. of my right, and I'd be or my friends with Zoom number two screwing off while I'm looking at one monitor. You know, I would not have learned shit. And so, for the average student or the below average, God forbid you're a below average student at home. They're not learning anything. And so, to me, that's not right.
Yeah, you got to find a way. You know, you really do. And I think there has been a systematic failure as far as the leadership from top to bottom around the nation as far as this, you know.
Awful.
Yeah, and I just don't understand it. But we have an opportunity again to vote coming up soon. And so, hopefully, that can, you know, whatever your preferences, you can make your statement there.
But you got bottom lines. You got, I mean, how about the guy in Minneapolis? I mean, I watched him. He looked like a little kid that was scared shitless to be the mayor.
I know. And well, you walk around Minneapolis right now. So it's crazy. Some of the riots and everything else. But
right. And then you see the same thing happening in Portland. You see the same thing happening in Seattle. And it's like, wait a minute. You guys are supposed to enforce the rules. And this shit's crazy. So, yeah, I agree with you, Greg. I mean, to me, the leadership piece around the country, I mean, God help us. I just had a friend who, lifelong California guy, grew up in Napa, right? Joins the Marine Corps. Goes to Naval Academy, joins the Marine Corps. He just moved his family to Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Loaded up the truck, and they moved to Beverly. Except it's he moved just across the river from St. Paul.
Wow.
Yeah.
And listen to this. Change.
Oh, my God. He tells these funny stories, right? Frost on the window this morning, by the way. He says his son takes the Ford F-150 to high school. And his first day, another kid says, "Hey, man, you want to race?" He's like, "What?"
That sounds like Wisconsin.
Right. We'll go out to whatever boulevard it was. And yeah, whenever you want to, we'll race.
Yeah, so, let's do it.
And then he goes to get a haircut. My friend goes to get a haircut. So he picks the oldest barbershop in town and goes in. He's got his mask on, right? And the guy's looking at him. Hey, man. You mind taking your mask off in here? Like, are you from Minnesota or something?
Yeah, what are you doing?
And he says, because I told him, I said, don't act like a cake eater from Minnesota. He says, why do you say that? I said, oh, my God, are you kidding? The hillbillies from North Dakota, they hate people from Minnesota because they love beating the shit out of them in hockey. And I said, so North Dakota people, the whole nine yards, they go down to Minnesota, and when University of North Dakota would play University of Minnesota, they would beat the shit out of them, and they would just love it, right?
I think it's funny when the guys I played with, a lot of them went to school in California or Texas or Florida, and you're down there training, and I was down in Florida training one time before the season started, and it was, I don't know, 69 or 70 degrees at 5:30 in the morning, and we show up for workouts, and I got a t-shirt on and shorts, and they're coming in jackets and hats and everything. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And the guy's like, it's cold out, man. And I said, do you know the temperature right now where I'm from? And he's like, no. And I go, it's 100 degrees colder. It's minus 40 today with the wind chill. He said, that's impossible. That's impossible. You'd die. And I said, 100 degrees, dude. You know, so like, please. So it makes it a little tougher. You've been here.
But the automatic car starter and the seat heater, come on.
Yeah.
Gotta
That's
have
That's a must.
That is, hey. Does
Prerequisite.
Does anything say I love you to your wife like an awesome automatic car starter with long range?
There's not in the wintertime. No,
nothing says I love you like quality automatic car starter.
I think my wife uses her seat heater like only without fail all the months of the year except maybe two.
But let me tell you, when it's cold and you're moving through the cold and you open that car door and all the windows are clear and the seat's warm, that's not a bad feeling. That's
nothing better.
That is quality of life. The God, I had a question I was going to ask you. No, it's interesting around the country. It's so different. Everywhere you go, depend on, sure, you know, what people are doing. And then also the leadership. You know, a lot of teachers' sure unions are saying, yeah, we're not going back. You know, we're not going back, blah, 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 blah. The where were you on September 11th, 2001?
I was in the bottom of a football stadium. We had a meeting. And we just happened to have the TV on, the big screen, because we were just doing some work down there when the first plane hit, and just to watch that. And what was weird is, like, I've been in those buildings multiple times, and to see that and the devastation and the ashes and the firefighters and everything, it was just crazy. And I think people, I mean, yeah, it's the anniversary, but more people should remember on other days too, because there was a lot of people that went to bed that night and, you know, never got a chance to see their loved ones again. So it's difficult.
Yeah. And when I think of that, it's like, they didn't do anything to anybody. They were innocent people. And, you know, some of the things about that day that, you know, I mean, first of all, the sight of those buildings actually falling was, I don't even know how to describe that, but before that, to see people jumping out of those buildings, and then days later, you heard the calls they made before they jumped to their families to tell them they loved them and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was an awful day. When did you get back to New York City? Did you get back?
It was a year or two later. I had to go there for some legal stuff and went to visit the site again, just to see it and stuff. And it's just like a hole, you know, in the collective soul of New York City at the time. And right. But there was a lot of people that were coming to pay their respects, so I thought that was kind of cool.
I was there, I want to say in 2007, and they were still cleaning it out. Yeah. And I was blown away by the size of the hole.
Oh,
it was enormous.
Yeah,
it's, and you look at, all of a sudden you're in the middle of, you know, the south end of Manhattan, and there's this huge clearing, and you're just looking around like, holy shit!
Did you hear about the legal battle that guy had to fight, the owner of the buildings?
No.
He had insurance, obviously, right, on both buildings, because they had been targeted before. Right. And the insurance company only wanted to pay for one building because they said it was not two incidences, but one giant instance. You know, instead of like basically saying, well, they, you know, commandeered two planes and they hit each building, but it's basically the same plan. Now he lost, but I mean, can you imagine?
You know what?
Sounds like insurance companies.
It sounds like lawyers, right? Okay, yeah, yeah. Here's what we're going to do. What?
This is what we're going to try.
All right. Can we bring somebody in from Canada to do that? That way when they go home, they don't have to live here like we do?
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to hate us. We'll get some Canadians to do that.
That's right.
I got an email here. Hey, Mac, you mentioned that Greg's part of the legal fabric of the legal fabric of the state of New York. Could you explain that? Yeah. Could you explain?
Basically, when I lost my case, they, it set a precedent, and they changed the wording of that rule. And, it had to be now proof of, you know, that you know, as far as Social Security, you know, you have to have, if you're the doctor, payments have to be made for 401k, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff to make it proof that, you know, okay, we work for the team and not this cloak and dagger shit. And they also made a rule that affected NHL, NBA, and Major League Baseball. Because if you think about it, I mean, you go into the doctor, I'm not, you know, going over to Vinny Testaverde and said, hey, I blew out my ACL, can you fix it for me? I go to see the team doctor. Right. So there's strict rules now, and as far as the bylaws are concerned for the Players Association and only contracts are done, basically the Lotus rule is the way they termed it. And what's funny, I got some phone calls years later, and one of my buddies was playing in the NHL. He was a rep for the team, and he said, I'm sitting in a meeting, and your name comes up. He said, I almost shit myself, you know, and I'm like, what? He goes, I know that guy. So he said, yeah, they use my name and my situation and everything else to talk about second opinions and all that kind of stuff and help the guys out.
Talk about you do some work with – still do work with athletes and
oh, yeah.
And even non-athletes. I know from just our relationship that you'll get contacted by parents of kids that are struggling and whatnot. Talk about what you do relative to not only sports psychology but human psychology and controversy and adversity and things like that.
Well, I you know, I'm the sports psych guy for several teams in town here, even at the college. And work with some big time guys that are, you know, first round draft picks and stuff like that. But a lot of it is the mental aspect of the game, performance anxiety, threat assessments for goaltenders, for example, you know, visualization, things that basically offer a toolbox for athletes because they are specialized individuals. They deal a lot with, you know, being in front of a whole bunch of people, high stress, stuff like that. And, also, you know, team dynamics and, you know, how to get along with people and, or how to confront somebody or how to deal with that. So it's a broad range. But it's so interesting because a lot of times when I get contacted by parents, I have rules that I say, well, if I'm going to work with your son or daughter, I have to tell you that whatever they say to me, I cannot tell you unless it has something to do with their health. And they're like, yeah, yeah. But I ask them, what do you think the problem is? And I would say 80% of the time, whatever they think is almost the total opposite of what the kid says or thinks.
Really?
Yeah. So, because you have a lot of parents that, especially here, hockey's huge. They all think they're going to go to play for the University of North Dakota, which is, you know, the gold standard of hockey in the nation for a lot of people. And they all think they're going to get scholarships. You know, like UND has 90 scholarships for hockey. They only have so many. And they recruit all over the nation. So, it's not – sometimes the parents put too much pressure on the kids, you know, and they don't understand or listen. And that's what I think helps them. When I deal with the athlete, having someone that listens to them.
It's interesting. One of the conclusions after, you know, all that I've done here in with this post-traumatic winning stuff that I do, you know, when I talk about suicide, you know, I say, you know, people think that, you know, veterans kill themselves because of, you know, what they see in combat. And I said, that's not my experience, is that tends not to be the case. There's normally something that happens to them in their life when they're younger that fractures a piece of them. And then when you add on more stress that is some life and then some professional, at some point that foundation cracks. And it's amazing to me, and that surprises people, like, oh, really? Like, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not combat related. It's, you know, it's a factor in terms of its additional stress. But if you want to know, they were, you know, sexually abused, right, in middle school by these kids. What?
Yeah.
Well, and you hear this, and I'll tell you, one of the great surprises of me, for me, doing all this now over the last course of the last almost 2 years is, I'm publicly, and I've done it probably now in front of 50,000 people, the amount of sexual violence and the amount of, you know, child abuse. And when I say child abuse, it's not all coming from, you know, parents. It might be other family members. It might be from other people. But, you know, kids don't know what to do. And a lot of times they just shut it down. And then that stuff doesn't stay shut down. And so it's been amazing. So, like, it's interesting when you say, you know, like, parents think it's one thing. And you sit down and you get to know a kid and you start talking to them. And it's a complete other. It's a complete other thing. Another thing that I find interesting, and I'd be curious about your opinion. When so I started doing this thing, and I my position that I would tell young leaders is this: they're waiting for you. They want to talk to you, and so the guys start doing this. And I remember one of the first guys who called me, I said, "So how's it going?" And he said, "It's been unbelievable." I said, "Do they want to talk to you?" And he said, "They won't shut the fuck up." He said, "They're like Chatty Cathy on like meth. Like they won't say light off. They won't shut the fuck up."
And it's, I was like, awesome.
That's awesome. What's your experience when? So here, these kids come. They're struggling in some part of their life. Their parents, you know, have come to you because it's not working anymore. Are they receptive to talking to you?
Well, they are when an element of trust is in place. And that's why a lot of times I'm referred. And the referral goes a long way based on who it comes from. And when, you know, when their parents are talking or kids are talking and they said, "Yeah, I went to see Greg." And they're like, "What do you mean?" And then they explained it and everything else. And, "Well, did it help?" "Oh, yeah, it helped. And I still do it." And they're like, "Really? Oh, give me his number or whatever." And then that's an open door a little bit. Then it's my job to get in a little bit deeper each time. And, you know, basically sift through the rubble to where the grains of sand are hidden. That's the ones that cause the most aggravation, you know. I mean, you know, so that's basically what I do and how I do it. So I think it's a couple fold process when it comes to that.
And the first part is trust, and then you know, to me, what's interesting is that how much people do want to do that, and how they want to talk about it. But a lot of us have such this phobia, because I have people say to me, "Well, I'm not like a mental health expert." I said, "Well, do you need to be an expert to tell somebody to stop faking it? Do you need to be an expert to tell somebody you're not ever going to get over it? Do you need to be an expert to tell somebody, hey, you've got to talk about your shit? Do you need to be an expert to tell somebody that physical fitness is part of mental health, or to tell them that they got to take care of their money better because that will take more stress out of your life, or to tell them, hey, you've got to stop drinking? Do you need to be a mental health expert to do any of that?" Yeah. And I said, "No, you need to be a friend." None of that's rocket science, but you got to get over this phobia. Like, "Well, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to go there." My point is, they want to go there. Don't you know that? Nobody goes there with them. And so it's interesting, what you have said in terms of young kids, because a lot of parents are intimidated to do that.
Sure. Well, it's parents nowadays, you know, the kids are growing up with a phone in their hand since they're five. They don't look people in the eye. They don't shake hands. They're afraid of, you know, confronting an adult or even being, you know what I mean? It's so sad. So the fabric of our nation is is crying for leaders. And I agree with you 100%.
Talk to me about how do you play the National Football League in this whole COVID thing?
Well, those guys have the money to bubble up and, you know, go through different protocols than the average bear. I think, I know for a fact, men and women are crying to watch something on TV other than reruns. And a live sporting event, even there's whatever, how many fans at Kansas City's game last night. So it was just a relief to finally see the NFL again. And we'll get to see college a little bit this weekend, which is pretty good. And, excuse me, they're going to have to do, there's Oklahoma State already pushed their game back a week because Tulsa has so many cases and this and that. They're going to have to be flexible. But the NFL is built in something like that, and then the NBA's got the bubble. And they've been keeping pretty strict protocols. So, I mean, I think that's how you do it, Mac. And it's great to see it, that it's on.
Well, it's been interesting, watching Major League Baseball as teams kind of, came together and then they went through 3 weeks. And then you had guys who went out and went to bars and things like that, right? And then they had to shut teams down for a week or 10 days or whatnot. But it's been very interesting. And it's almost like, the rules of the world don't apply to me. And then you had to suffer the slings and arrows of your peers. And you could only imagine, like, in a team where you're in an environment like that, not only of those guys on your team, but their wives, right?
Oh, yeah.
And how
their
pissed,
mothers, their fathers.
Oh, my God, and how pissed they would be. Like, wait a minute. He does nothing but go to work and come home and go to work and come home. And now we all have to go through this because you idiots wanted to go to a club.
Yeah, or you snuck someone in.
Right. And so to me, that's been very interesting to see that. And then I think most, 90% or more have figured it out. And then I think you've seen some of that, go away. But I think when anytime colleges, and it's gone on college campuses, they bring everybody together. So college kids are going to stay at home and isolate themselves and not going to go to the party.
Yep.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Okay.
Exactly.
ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so, but how do you teach them? How do you help them grow through it and all of that? And I think that's what's obviously needed in this country. When's the next hunting event? Deer season? What do you?
Yeah. Deer season is, well, bow's open now, but I think this year is November. Third week in November, I think, third week in November.
Got it. What about you're a bow hunter though? When and you're an elk hunter? What, over in Montana?
No, Idaho. I went a long time ago. They have a special thing where they take you up there and it's not any walking kind of deal and stuff like that. So it's perfect for a guy like me. And it's, it's nice to go out and enjoy the outdoors. It really is. I mean, it's peaceful, quiet usually, and it's fun to put some meat in the freezer. I know in California there's not a lot of deer walking around everywhere, but there are some.
Yeah, up in the Sierra.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's a fun deal for us, and the kids get involved too, so I can't complain about that.
What about let's talk food for a second.
Okay.
I went out last night and I met a friend of mine, a Marine Corps friend from years ago, and we have to eat outside, right? So,
yep.
Because there's all the smoke in the air out here, and I didn't really notice it, but it's kind of like a high fog. So, and I couldn't smell anything. So I got out of my car and I look and I see my friend. So, It's this great Mexican restaurant down in San Clemente, and there's a table outside. I see him. I walk over. So we're eating, and I get this seafood chimichanga with lobster, crab, shrimp, right? And white sauce and rice and beans with some avocado and sour cream on it. So we finish dinner, and he gets like a filet fajita. Yeah, a filet fajita. So
what?
Exactly. So
why would they put a filet in a fajita?
I don't know. It's a collision of two worlds. And so
it's stupid.
So we're sitting there, and now this woman gets in her Escalade. So we're out in actually like a parking lot, right? And but it's got an awning over it and it's roped off. But there's cars parked, like there's one row of stalls on the far side of the parking lot. She puts her Escalade in reverse. Now, the Escalade's got a camera, right?
Yeah, and backup sensors.
And so what's it say? Objects in this may be closer than they actually appear, right? So
yeah.
She's backing up, And there's this barrel kind of behind him by maybe 2 or 3 feet. And it's got one of the posts that the awning's hanging on and lights and shit on.
Oh, in there, yeah.
And so she's backing up and backing up and backing up. And I'm like, and I start to get out of my chair to move. And he turns and she hits the barrel. And Jesus. The thing starts to fall over, right? And then it rights itself. And everybody's like, whoa. And so she gets out of her car. She sits in her car for like 30 seconds. Then she gets out. She comes walking back. She goes, She looks at me and she says, are you okay?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I'm fine.
Lady.
But you really scared my friend here. And yeah. he looks at me and says, what? I'm like, you terrified my friend.
Yeah, pay for my dinner.
Right. Do you want to pay for our dinner and we'll call it good?
Yeah.
And she said, okay, I just wanted to check. And then she got
any damage to the Escalade? No.
No, she got in her Escalade and left.
Those are not cheap cars.
How do you back into something with a camera like that?
She's probably on her phone. You know, that's typically what happens. Like, how many times have you been driving on the highway and a guy's watching a movie on his phone, or a girl is texting, and you know, it's just brutal. You know, brutal.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I said, you know, she was texting. She got her phone. She threw it in reverse. She's talking to, you know, hey, I'll meet you in 10 minutes, blah, 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 blah. I got
about one more minute I can hang back, and then I got an appointment. So,
all right. Let me, no.
What do you got?
I just want to tease. In a future installment, when Greg comes back,
there you go.
We will, we'll talk about hunting confrontation.
Okay.
Greg's had some incredible hunting confrontation.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, hey, first of all, thank you for doing this.
And thanks for the work you do for your guys, too, and girls.
No. At some point, you're going to get involved in it because it keeps getting bigger. And at some point, we're going to do something together. So I appreciate
that'd be
you.
Scary.
No, but it's not. It's always a good time, though.
Yeah, I know.
It's always a good time. All right, bud. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Take care, brother.
Yeah.
Ciao.
That is Greg Lotus. He's a gigantic man. He's like, 6'6" and 300, you know, whatever. And his dad is Gigantor, too. His grandfather was in the German concentration camp. They're Polish. Lotus, L-O-Y-T-Z. And his grandfather was in the German concentration camps in World War II. And they're Polish from Poland, right? And Craig's dad was a great pitcher in Canada. I think he's in like the Canadian either baseball or softball Hall of Fame. And the Twins wanted to sign him. And his dad says to him, not like, what, you play a sport for a living? No, that's not what men do. You need to get a job. You need to get a job. So that's what he did. But no, he's an interesting guy. Let me read you an email. Mac, holy smokes. What a story. You have some extremely interesting friends. But his story about going from the Jets to being disabled, your wife gets cancer, you can't work, good God. The things life puts on people's plates sometimes don't seem very fair. What a wonderful interview. Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's on his best behavior right there. When he's not on his best behavior, he's pretty funny. And then he and his dad used to do a show on Saturday morning. What did they call it? Oh, it's called The Lowdown. And his dad would come on with him. And it was hilarious, right? Him and his dad, you know. And his dad's like a NASCAR guy, but he doesn't know a lot about NASCAR. And Greg would just like let him have it about, oh, here we go, the NASCAR moment. And then all these people who are NASCAR people, they're like, no, it's awesome. We love it. Leave your dad alone. It would be hilarious. But no, he's a He's a good dude. He's a good dude. And let me tell you, and he's a great friend. He and I have been friends for a long time. And he's one of the most loyal friends that you could ever have. And so, no, I said, hey, look, do you want to come on? And he said, I'd love to. I'd love to. Because, you know, I'll tell you, for Greg, one of the things that us doing the radio show together, and he was great at it. Because he's a smart guy and he's interested and he likes to talk about issues. And so it gave him, you know, the opportunity, and he lived like a mile from the studio, gave him the opportunity to get way more involved in the community and whatnot. And so, no, we had a great time doing it. But no, he's a great guy. And his story, I mean, imagine that, you know, the Lotus Rule. And you can, in fact, let me, as we walk out the door today, YS. If you Google the Lotus Rule, this is what you'll find. Court to rule on suit filed by ex-Jet. Balls in court as Canada's NFL dream ends painfully. That's about Greg in 2002. And here's another one by Newsday. This is a New York City newspaper, right? Felled at the line of scrimmage and talks about... then here's an All-Marine Radio story. Nice. Greg Lotus, NFL disability, mental health. And here's another one from the Via Library from DePaul University. Workers' compensation versus medical malpractice. Greg Lotus epitomizes his struggle as he fights for the right to sue the New York Jets. Then here's one from the New York State Supreme Court. Plaintiff, Greg Lotus. Workers' comp insider, football workers' comp insider. So anyway, Greg, a little bit of history. Breaking news right now. Listen to this. Bahrain to recognize Israel as United Arab Emirates deal set to be signed. Bahrain has become the latest Arab nation to agree to normalize ties with Israel as part of a broader diplomatic push by President Donald Trump and his administration to fully integrate the Jewish state into the Middle East. Trump announced the agreement on Friday following a three-way phone call he had with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Bahrain's King Ahmad bin Isa Al Khalifa. The three leaders also issued a brief six-paragraph joint statement attesting to the deal. The announcement on the 19th anniversary of September 11, 2001, comes less than a week before President Trump hosts a White House ceremony to mark the establishment of full Arab relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Bahrain's foreign minister will attend that event. I will tell you what, man. He got nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And this stuff is like unprecedented since I've been alive. I mean, I've said on this program that, you know, in my lifetime, Israel has always been in conflict with its Arab neighbors, always. So will my time on this earth be, you know, and seeing those nations recognize Israel? Wow. Wow, so unbelievable. If you haven't listened to the interview I did yesterday with Matt Kiker, you need to do that. Put that on your list of things to do. It's one of the best interviews I've ever done. And that's where you need to go with the people that you know that need help. You don't got to be an expert. You don't got to be a psychiatrist, all those people you can find. What you have to be is somebody who's a friend that sticks your hand out and said, hey, man, I want to talk to you. And when you listen to his story and you see the depths of the blackness that he was in and you hear his voice and where he is today, It's amazing. And I'm going to tell you that every one of you that's listening to this is capable of doing that. So listen to that interview if you haven't heard it yet over the weekend. So on this Friday, when we remember the events of 19 years ago, say a prayer for the families that live with those losses every day, and they are Gold Star families. From the American military, they are families of suicide victims that have come home and taken their own life after fighting. They are the people, approximately 3,000 people from New York City who died that day. They are the firefighters and the first responders that have died since then because of complications to their health. Remember all of them and their families who pay the price on a daily basis. And then I would say on this anniversary, commit to making this country a better place. Because it seems like we're struggling to have leaders that will do the right thing. They're more interested in being popular than they are standing up and telling the truth. And when you won't tell the truth, it means you put off a day of reconciliation. And that's, in my experience, that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. So, again, on this day that we remember the events of 19 years ago, keep all those people in your thoughts and prayers. And then don't be afraid to change somebody's life. So, on this Friday, have a great weekend. Almarin Radio, out.